Well, okay, we're about to kick off an all-new issue of Geek in the City Radio, which comes to you free every single Tuesday. You can watch and stream us at YouTube. Just search up for Geek in the City. Facebook Live, of course, Geek in the City. But our preferred place is check us out over on twitch.tv/Geek in the City. You can watch us live. You can engage in the chat. We try to respond as often as possible when people are live with us in the chat, because that just makes it a lot of fun. If you're not able to catch us live every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, well, the podcast goes up also free on Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays, because, you know, life happens at times. As always, this show will always be free to you, the listener. All we ask is that you please share and give us 5-star reviews on any of your podcast aggregate of choice or our Twitch channel, whatever is required. And, of course, please show our sponsors some love. They're the ones that keep us going. They have believed in us in a long time, just like you have. So, with all of that out of the way, here we go. We're going to kick off an all-new issue of Geek in the City Radio.
Hello, and welcome to issue 730 of Geek in the City Radio. I am one of your hosts, Aron Duran.
I'm one of your other hosts, Beanerita.
And I am your other host, Cable Hashitani.
It's just the backup.
Oh, okay.
That's the backup. Howdy, everyone. How are folks doing?
I honestly thought you were going to start with howdy, howdy, howdy.
You do love a howdy, howdy, howdy.
I do like it. And I think it's because I enjoy happy Tom Hanks voice. I find it soothing.
Is that what it's from? What is it, Toy Story?
Toy Story. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Although I don't think it's actually, now that I think about it, I don't think it's Tom Hanks as Woody. I think it's another Toy Story character pretending to be Woody going, howdy, 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 I'm Woody.
Yeah, like making fun of him.
I think so, right? Maybe.
No, that sounds like a Buzz Lightyear line, actually.
No, I
would never quote
ones.
Tom. I would never quote What's-His-Nuts, Tim Allen.
Well, it could be Mr. Potato Head. That does seem like something that he would do.
Yes, that's close.
Possibly. Or the Slinky Dog. I could see the Slinky Dog doing it.
Oh, man.
That's a Jim Varney, right?
Yeah, RIP to both those. Like, you know, Don Rickles and Jim Varney passed.
Mm-hmm. See, someone posts that someday John Cena needs to do another An Earnest movie. When you put him next to Jim Varney, he's just a swole Jim Varney.
Yeah.
Which back in the day, Jim Varney was pretty cut. He's always he was always thin, but he was pretty cut.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to people who interview him. They're like, it's so weird because that's not who he is.
No, Ernest was a character.
It was a commercial character. Ernest P. Warhol.
So Warhol or Worrell? I thought it was Worrell.
It's Worrell.
Worrell. Okay. Yeah.
Not Warhol. That would be, oh I'd man, now I want that mashup.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I almost said that would be Amish. That would not be. I mean, it's been a weird day. I've been surrounded by military health professionals. Day job, work in the convention.
Okay. I was going to say.
So for actual military health systems.
The person in the room that I expect to be surrounded by military health professionals on any given day is not you.
Correct.
Shouldn't be me either.
Yeah.
Fuck those people.
No, but so, you are more likely to spend time at the VA.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I do. Well, no, I used to spend a pretty ridiculous amount of time at the VA.
Sure. Right. No, they were all very nice, and they were like 80% civilian clothes. But the ones that weren't were all in like a version of a dress uniform, because it's like a professional gathering, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is that I don't know how this works. But a dude in an army uniform comes up after one of the big breakout sessions, like around 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
He comes like, yeah, how can I help you? And most of them are asking food options around the convention center, which, by the way, we all know are dog shit. They really, really, really need to work on that. He's like, no, where can I go to buy some khakis? I need to buy pants. I need to buy new khakis. And I'm like, oh, well, around here, not really. But if you have time, you can go to Pioneer Square. I said, there's a Nordstrom right there. I'm sure they'll have something. He's like, okay, good. And I was like, happy. And then he just decided he needed to vent to tell me why. And apparently why, I don't know how this happens, because again, I don't know. But But apparently for military adjacent professional gatherings, the Army just changed the color that the khakis are supposed to be. And it didn't get approved until yesterday when they were all en route.
Mm-hmm.
So they all show up and they're out of uniform code technically. And apparently from what he told me, he's like, we all agreed to not say anything, do this conference, and when we get home, we'll buy the khakis. But some fucker tattled. So we're all going to have to go buy. And it's like an off beige.
No.
That's what he said. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Maybe their superiors came back to them and were like, well, you need to go fucking do this. No, you need to provide me the uniform that you expect me to wear. And also, you need to give proper notice of something before I can implement that change.
That's what I thought, too. And he was very annoyed that he had to go buy new khakis.
I would be, too, because that's not how it's supposed to work.
Right.
Especially if, like, you are required. Are these khakis are civilian, or they're just going to, like, buy civilian clothes and that are close enough to what is the uniform?
I mean, I don't know the difference. The only one I can always tell is definitely a dress uniform are the Marine pants.
Mm-hmm.
Because they look like Carillion pants.
Well, I'm guessing that they were wearing their BDUs or whatever they're calling them these days.
Mm.
The camo?
They were not.
They were wearing dress.
Yes. Button-up, dress, full rank insignias, all the tchotchkes.
And the color of the pants for the dress uniform has now been changed.
For apparently events just for this type of event.
Right, like civilian-facing events.
Yeah.
Well, then it's those like a pants lighter need to khaki. Be provided to you.
I don't know. But it was a lot of like, they were all medical divisions.
Hmm.
You know, obviously. Why would they not be all medical divisions? It's a medical conference.
Okay, it was just a medical conference, people. and they just happened to be there representing the military.
I think it's like one of those weird integrated military health systems. I don't know what that is. I'm assuming it is the integration of civilian private practices that specifically work for armed services, plus armed services that work in these hospitals.
Let's get June on the phone and ask her.
No. But as always, the Air Force people were the most casual. They also had the most free time.
You don't say.
And I know it's got nothing to do with the branch. It's what programs you're going to. But almost inevitably, like the Marines and the Army folks were like, we have 1 hour to eat. Where's the place we have to eat? The Air Force and Navy people were like, so I got like 3 hours to kill. What can I do downtown? Sure. But I am such a dork. Every time I saw like the Marine dress uniform, I was like, oh, you haven't earned your Carillion blood stripe yet on the side of your pants. And I always have to like, they don't do that. It's just a yellow stripe. They don't get one for shooting down this many this type of ship or outrunning this kind of ship. They don't get different blood stripes because Carillion is not a real thing.
No, it does not.
Be cool if it was.
Would it?
I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
It'd be pretty cool.
Possibly maybe.
Spaceships and stuff.
You just want spaceships, but what it sounds like you're saying is like, yay, war.
No, no, I do. I just want spaceships and the uniforms you wear when you fly spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what I want. No, I am never yay war. Except when it's needed. Wow.
That got dark.
Except when it is to please the blood god. The blood god emperor.
More blood for the blood god.
More blood for the blood god.
Oh, to hell with blood god.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, how's everybody else doing? What's going on?
Pretty good. We had fun last night.
We did have fun last night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go.
Thanks. So last night, we all headed over together for the first time to TPK Brewing. Just off of Hawthorne. Just in that little party stretch of Hawthorne.
Just past the Hawthorne Triangle.
It's
like 53rd and Hawthorne.
Something like that.
Yeah, because the turn to go towards Division and connect to Foster Road, mm-hmm. that's on 52nd.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
So listeners will remember that we interviewed Dana, I'm not going to remember her last name, a while back when they were getting that space started up, mm-hmm. and now mm-hmm. they are off and running with, they've developed a whole upstairs area, and they do, you know, not just gaming for the patrons who go there, but they also do events. And last night's event was a D&D-centric podcasters kind of roundtable to which we were invited. And it was a lot of fun, right?
It was, yeah, I had a good time. I thought it was a lot of fun.
It was put together by a friend of the show, Max Hobbs.
Yes, who I met for the first time. What a lovely dude.
He is. Mm-hmm. I've known Max for going on 10 years. Mm-hmm. And he is... by his own admission, possibly the first professional dungeon master of Portland.
I have no way to refute or agree with that, so yeah. I'll just take his word.
Like,
I don't know.
He's not sure either, but he believes it to be true.
Which is pretty cool.
Like, and that, like, the concept of professional DM kind of bore out of that, because everyone was like, wait, you could do that?
Yeah. Be pretty cool.
I've
thought about it.
I still get people to this day that are like, well, I really like DMing and I do this. I'm like, cool. Have you thought about, you know, charging for it and doing this? It's like, you get paid to do this? It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, my friend, here is a list of people that, like, I have a list of professional DMs put together just so that I can email it to customers all the time at Guardian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they're like, I need a professional DM. Cool, here's 8 of them.
Right.
And they're like, wait, 8? Why is this a list? I thought you were going to give me a name.
If I could pull it off, I would do it. In terms of, like, financially. Mm-hmm. To where, like, I didn't need the day job.
There is a service or an app. I believe I heard about it because it was being advertised on Kill Every Monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Check them out.
I have. And it's not, it's one of those things that will take a decent amount of time to start up while I keep the day job and my freelance work. And it just comes down to bandwidth.
Mm.
You know, it's just one of those things. But it might be something I transition my writing away from into that. I don't know. I'm at a writing crossroads right now.
I realize this is stuff that could be all talked about off air, but at the same time, people might benefit from this.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I would recommend is, knowing several professional DMs, I would say talk to any of them. And then realize that if you take on becoming a professional DM and being paid for your services for that.
Right.
That means that will start taking precedence over playing role-playing games with your friends that are not a paid gig. And it turns something that you love into a job.
There is that.
And there are people who are designed for that. Like, Max is one of them. I'm sure that he had his own, I've got to get to a place where I'm okay with, I just do this for hire. I don't
right.
do this.
For fun.
For funds. But that would be something that I would recommend that you, or anyone who thinks about doing this, consider greatly.
I get it. I think I could still run for fun, for friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a regular, like, every other week or whatever.
I think if it was a thing that you just put a shingle out there and took on 1 to 2 games a month and no more than that, and that then becomes, this is extra fun money, or this is extra savings.
And that's what I've thought about doing. Like, an every other Thursday from, like, whatever, 7 to 10.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a grand idea.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why if you look for services that connect people, that should take a lot of the more administrative work out of it.
Right.
And they're just helping you find players and helping the players find you. And you can just focus on the storytelling and the DMing.
Right.
Essentially Fiverr for DM
services. Yeah. And I'm going to look into it more because I'm just needing, I am needing more creative and storytelling outlets that continuously trying to create comics is not fulfilling.
Sure.
everyone knows my issues with the comic industry. If I could afford to hire an artist and go 100% self-published at like a good rate for an artist, I would do it in a heartbeat and just be done with the system completely. I just would, because I'm just tired of the system that doesn't respond, and it's the same 10 people like over and over again.
Largely, I think that's what anyone in comics would love. They would all like that one project that gives them the, I was going to say fuck you money, but it's not fuck you money, but that gives them the seed money for any and every subsequent project they want to do, because then they can pay for their artist up front.
Yeah.
And then doing self-publishing, they get to reap all rewards on that. And they can, you know, come up with whatever contract, so it's still equitable for all parties involved.
That would be something I would really like to do.
I love the Hero Initiative. I would love to also have it so that the comic book industry and comic book professionals didn't require a non-for-profit fundraising organization that's designed to pay their medical bills when they start dying off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the industry is really hard on bodies. Especially really, artists, but even like writers too. It's just hard on you.
The comics industry is hard on itself. It
capitalism is hard on bodies.
Yes, that is very true.
Not that, to like diminish, you know, the your experience, but
right. No, I get what you're saying. It's
scarcely
Denise said my line.
I was like, what's going on?
I know. Sadly, comics doesn't own that particular problem.
No. It does not.
But it
exploits it.
It especially doesn't do anything to help itself.
Yeah.
The sad thing is that it's probably one of the worst paying industries.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Of the many modern industries.
Yes. If you it just flat out is. I think, and then we can move on. I think one of the most insidious things about the comics industry is how it is designed now intentionally, I honestly believe, to be exploitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who want to create comics in any department, art, write, whatever, lettering, whatever it might be, it as wonky as this sounds, it is a calling. You need to do it. They inspired you as a kid. You want to do it so badly. You will put up with working conditions you would never put up with in a different job. And that's probably could be said for a lot of the arts. You'll just take it, because in the end, they're going to tell you, well, you get to make comics, so be happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't think any kind of general strike whatever happened, like the WGA or SAG, they're really good at policing people that scab. I think if that were to happen as an unofficial general strike with comic creators.
Well, first there would have to be a union.
But even just like a professional agreement of like, none of us are doing anything now. We're all going to stop. Out. We're all going to walk out. I'm going to quit writing Wonder Woman comics. I'm going to quit writing Captain Marvel comics. You quit drawing. We're going to shut the industry down and force them to play ball with us. I think we would go 1 month without new titles, and I think DC and Marvel would line up scabs without fucking flinching. I just think they would. And if comics sucked quality-wise for 6 months, they don't care, because they're just IP farms now. That's neither here. Sorry, I didn't mean to go down that road. That's just where I'm at a personal crossroads of like, what now?
I think it's important to talk about this, especially, and it does.
Especially considering the guests, yeah,
it leans into what we're going to talk about in this evening, which is a more not positive side, but the part of the comic industry that allows itself for celebration. Like, there are, for as often as we criticize the industry, we criticize the business of the industry, the artistic side of the industry, we always want to celebrate.
Yeah.
And that's what we get to do with our guest this evening.
Yeah. Speaking of which, got to double check. Not in the waiting room yet. Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, that's just where I'm at. It's very much a what now, you know, I'm not going to stop writing, but like, what form does that now take? Because, you know, the factor is like, I'm getting older. And while I may not feel like it, my body is like, mentally, I may not. Like, mentally, you know, feel young. I still probably connect more with like angsty teenage music than I do with music I should probably like at my age or whatever.
I mean, what is the music that you should probably like at your age?
I don't know.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
I never liked that ever. I guess you're right. What am I supposed to like? Look, I'm always going to like my stupid hair metal, but like when I see people
that is age appropriate.
Yeah, but when I see people my age that like downplay like the newest like pop star or whatever, and I'm like, no, that's kind of good. I'm digging it. It's on my rotation. I don't know. Yeah, that.
And I'm pretty sure that Christian's favorite artist is Taylor Swift.
No, I get it. And also, like, it's so weird, but, like, I was always curious that I probably liked the show, and then Ida finally convinced me to watch it. The show's called The Descendants on Disney Plus. It's a high school kids show, but they're all the descendants of Disney villains. And I'm like, this is cool! And they just released the trailer for their Disney Plus movie, The Rise of Rose Red. And I'm like, oh, I know who that is. Like, the show's written for like 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
Or when I saw the booth at San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago for them, you know, launching the new Monster High show, I was like, I would write the shit out of a Monster High episode. Universal Monsters, but now in high school? Fuck yeah, I'd write that. But my body's like, hey, you're 48 years old. You maybe need to think about the future when we begin to fall apart more. You have the money to do it. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
No, you lost me.
Not the money to do it, but you have something that is stable that when part of your body begins to fail, you can go to the doctor and not think, am I going to now lose my apartment because of this?
Right.
If I only focus on comics, that's not going to happen.
Here's the thing that I want to tell you, and it's going to sound like I'm trying to crush your dreams, but I'm not. I promise you that's not what I'm doing.
All right.
Most people in this world have their full-time 9-to-5 or, you know, whatever number of hours they work because their jobs are extremely demanding. And then outside of their working hours, they spend as much or as little time as they can on the things that actually bring them joy. And does that suck? Yes. Would it be cooler if we had UBI and could only do the things we love? Abso-fucking-lutely. But that's not the world we live in right now. So we all just make time for it. And that way we are sustaining ourselves,
right?
Physically.
Which is why my previous statement is: I'm not done writing. I am done trying to pursue the industry, or I think I'm done trying to pursue the industry. My writing's not going to stop, and if that means that every few months I just put out a weird ass PDF of some short story, I'm going to do that. I put out a weird ass gaming supplement that makes me chuckle, and I was like, you know, it'd be funny. I don't know, something about whatever, mushroom armor. What is mushroom armor like? Whatever. I just really made that up. I have no idea.
But now you got me thinking.
Yeah. Or like last night when we mentioned, and you know, whatever, when I mentioned like it would be funny if it was D&D plus Ally McBeal, that whole joke about like a state law would suck in fantasy. How do you deal with that? And that's goofy. So yeah.
What was the name that you came up with?
Me. Denise did.
What was the name that you came up with?
I remember.
Oh, what was it?
Living Will.
That wasn't me.
Yeah.
No, that was you. You
call it Living Will.
No.
I said it would make Living Will Law very strange.
Oh. Well, then I don't remember then.
But living,
I didn't come up with any.
You're right. Living that. Will was the direction that you were taking it.
I just said to be like Ally McBeal meets D&D.
Yep.
Look, I know I was killing it last night, but I wasn't that funny. In fact, the two times that like the whole room was like LOLing, like genuinely, that was you. I don't remember what you said, but I noticed you. How much everyone laughed.
Thank you. And now that I think about it, it would be more Boston Legal meets D&D, not Ally McBeal. Because now I'm thinking like, what is the D&D version of Denny Crane and Alan Shore? And he doesn't have Mad Cow. He has Mad Bullet. I have Mad Bullet disease.
I don't know, but they would be, Denny Crane would be Brendan Lee Mulligan. And
you think so?
And I think
he might be Alan Shore.
You think so?
Alan Shore is the more level-headed.
Okay. Like I immediately went, if you cast Matt Mercer and Brendan Lee Mulligan in those two roles.
Matt Mercer is the Candace Bergen character in Boston Legal. And I mean that with 100% love.
That's hilarious.
Abria, oh my God. Abria would be who Rene Auberjonois played eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think Brendan Lee Mulligan is Alan Shore.
Yeah, okay. I'll take that.
And Lou Wilson would be Denny Crane.
Yes, he would.
And it already works that he and Brendan Lee Mulligan are super tight.
Yes.
And probably already made an agreement a long time ago that if they were getting up in their 80s and neither of them were married, they would marry each other so they could have benefits in case one or the other happened to the other person. I could almost guarantee they've had that deal at one time.
I God, still don't know who any of those people are, for the most part.
Right, that's fine.
You would know them by sight immediately.
Sure, sure, because people won't stop sending me their videos.
It's because they're funny.
Right.
Only if you're entertained by D&D live play stuff.
I'm entertained by the Dimension 20 stuff because it's more like watching a radio drama that happens to involve D&D. Like, the story is altered by the dice roll. But it plays like a radio drama.
I see less of their D&D live play stuff and more of the shenanigans that they get up to on Game Changers with Sam Reich.
When this is over tonight, I'm going to run past a theory past you on Game Changer.
Okay.
Okay. However, I see our guest is in the waiting room.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
okay.
And so...
All right. Mike Rosen is a lifelong fan of comics who in recent years has edited comics such as Fighting COVID, Beating COVID, and Living with COVID, which were produced by the Northwest Disability Support for the Oregon Health Authority. But today he is joining us as the board chair and founder of the Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts, whose mission is to create a vibrant and living space that is accessible to all and celebrates the history, influence, diversity, and joy of all aspects of cartoon arts. So,
welcome, Mike Rosen. You're on mute. Nah. So, as soon as he notices, we'll get the ball rolling on this.
Great.
I think you can unmute him. There he is.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. I heard you reading our mission statement.
Yeah.
That's really cool because I can never memorize it. So I've got it sitting right here.
It's listy, which is sometimes harder to roll really off the tongue and stay in your brain.
We have a lot of lists.
But let's get into it. How did this start?
So I guess like Cable might know this, but there was a exhibit at the Oregon Historical Society, I think around 2015 or 2017, and it was called From Geek to Chic, and Anina Bennett and Paul Guinan, I think, were the curators. And then a couple of years ago, like 3 years ago, a memory came up about the exhibit on Paul Guinan's Facebook page, and people started commenting on how great the exhibit was, And wouldn't it be great if we had a museum in Portland? So some people I met with, Anina and Katie Pride, and we talked a little, and then it just kind of, I ran with it, put together a board and set some goals. And it's been about 2.5 years since then. Almost 3 years, probably.
Cool. What makes you, why do you think Portland is a really good epicenter for that? I mean, there's always like, well, we have so many creators here and so many companies that publish here, but like, why do you think all of that in general, Portland is a magnet for that kind of form of art?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, because we've got all these creators here and all these publishers, we've got university programs. I mean, I just think the city loves comics and cartoon arts, and I think they would really, I think the region loves it. It is so dense with creativity that people would come to see this and want to participate and, you know, again, feel like it's a great opportunity to celebrate not just the Pacific Northwest, but cartoon arts in general from all over.
Right.
So I don't know if that was a good enough answer, Aaron.
No. Right. What is something you'd want folks, because they'll be like, what do you mean? It's just a, it's going to be a comic museum. Well, that's weird. Like, how would you answer that? How would you answer someone who doesn't? And I think in a way, this is a very distinctly American issue. Mm-hmm. When the public's like, I don't get it. It's cartoons and comics. Why does it need a museum?
Right.
Like, how would you respond to someone who thinks that way?
I would just tell them to go to Portland Art Museum and don't bother us. No, I wouldn't say that.
You're really selling it.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, a couple of things. We want it to be a living space. So it's not just a museum. We want to have a maker space in there where artists can work during the day, where they can collaborate with students. We want to have presentations. We want to have expositions. So we have a lot of aspirations. You know, I just think that if the question is this an art form? You know, it's been around for 100 years, and it's been used, well, more than 100 years actually. Mm-hmm. But you know, in terms of popular press, it's been almost 100 years of comics, of editorials, of animation, of, you know, and I think it's time. Well, and there are other cartoon art museums around the country. There's one in San Francisco. There's a really famous one, the Billy Ireland Museum at the University, at Ohio State University. There's one in London. There's one, you know, and so I guess I think that it has been recognized as an art form. And I think people would really appreciate the art form if they had a venue where they could come and see it displayed and honored appropriately. So that's, I mean, that's partly, I guess that's what I would say to them. You know, don't discount it as an art form. There's so much variety and distinct elements to the cartoon arts that, I mean, it's a plethora of opportunity for art and to see art being made and appreciated.
Do cool. do you see it being a space that is going to focus more on more modern artists and works, or do you think you'll spend oh my God, words. How much space of the museum, I guess, for lack of a better word, would you say is going to go towards the, like, the further back history compared to how much time and space is going to go towards modern?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we've talked about, in terms of exhibits, having, you know, popular culture type exhibits that rotate through, but having exhibits that really focus on the Pacific Northwest and the history of cartoon arts in the Pacific Northwest. I think, you know, and we've used the Cartoon Art Museum in San Francisco as a model, and they do historical perspectives, some really cool stuff. They do pop culture. They do stuff from the 70s and 80s. I mean, we would be looking like at the Museum of Cartoon Arts for inspiration, and maybe even some traveling exhibits coming up here. But we haven't gotten down into that detail, but we've said we really want diversity in our presentations, and we'd be presenting, you know, it wouldn't just be like the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or the 2000s. We'd be doing studies of different styles, maybe like manga. We'd be talking about things like Afrofuturism in comics. We want to talk about women in comics. We want to talk about news in comics or cartoon art. So it's kind of like now the sky's the limit. And I think we're going to get a lot of feedback from the community in terms of what they want to see. And I hope we'll be receptive to that.
Cool. That sounds really great. So I thought, Cable, do you have something?
No.
I thought you were, I was like, why are you raising your hand?
I'm reaching for my water so that I can stay hydrated.
Reach for my water.
Right. Let's all take a quick water break. Now I need to, damn it.
Train drink.
You beat me to it.
Throwback. So what are some of the, because you got the Kickstarter going up, which launched 6 days ago. Right. And let's see, actually, I'm going to put a link in our chat right now for that, and we will also put a link on the show itself or on awesome. On the podcast.
Yeah.
What are some of the I see you've got some pretty lofty goals for the Kickstarter and for what is planned as a physical location. Could you give folks kind of a rundown of what the dream is to make this happen?
Well, I mean, the first thing, we're shooting for $75,000. That's what the first exhibit we know would cost. I mean, labor costs are pretty high, curation costs for the space, costs for framing. We envision a space like Lloyd Center, because it's becoming so cool over there with, you know, kind of an epicenter of independent shops. We aspire to like 6,000 square feet. We want to have room for a classroom, maybe a small bookstore.
Oh, nice.
We want to have the opportunity to do presentations there. We're interested. One of the other reasons we're interested in Lloyd Center is because it'll have foot traffic. It has access to mass transit. It has parking. So it'll be very accessible to the community. But you, in terms of lofty goals, am I getting to your answering your questionnaire?
Yeah, just like how do you envision like an end game goal? Is it to eventually have a freestanding place? You know, because you mentioned also like a makerspace and an education center and maybe a bookstore. Those are all like pretty lofty goals. So what would be envisioned as like an end game space?
Well, we would build out the space over time. The goal would be to, what we aspire to in the short term is one, to show that the community would invest in the museum so that there's community interest, one, that they would come to an exhibit that would actually be attended, and three, that we could run an exhibit. Then we think if we succeed on those in those areas, then we think we'll have the opportunity to look for a more permanent location with larger grant investments, business sponsorships, individual sponsorships. So the end game is to have a brick and mortar location. I mean, maybe we would be in Lloyd Center for a while and mm-hmm. run exhibits there, since it's so attractive in terms of value that you get for the square footage. But we do envision being in a brick and mortar space and expanding over time, you know, as we can, access dollars to do that.
Okay, cool. Are there any shops you've been teaming up with lately that are kind of working with this, or like kind of I don't want to say like shouldering the burden along with you, but I can only imagine that this would only be a boon to shops as well.
Well, Debbie Smith from Excalibur, Chris Simons from I Like Comics, Andy Johnson from Cosmic Monkey, and I think those are our shop owners that are on our board. Mm-hmm. We did a kickoff for the Kickstarter at Rose City Comics. I think the comic shops have been really supportive. They've been generous in terms of their donations for the Kickstarter. I think they see this as a really great opportunity.
Katie Pride of Books with Pictures is also on your board.
Yeah, right. Katie, forgot her.
Shoot, I actually did have something in there.
Oh, and then right I ruined away. It.
No, you didn't ruin it. It's I remembered that other thing, and that kicked the question out of my head. It'll come back to me. Just go on. I still have nothing.
Well, that comes back to him. So, it sounds like you're going to be taking over one of the old Anchor store spaces.
Interested. And we looked at it last year, and we have a preliminary price for what it would cost, and it looks like the spaces are still available that we would be interested in.
Okay. Yeah, it would be pretty cool to have a bigger attraction back in Lloyd Center. I mean, there are a lot of really cool stores that are going in, but something that like people might want to come back to repeatedly and thus drive more foot traffic for those cool stores. Sounds like, you know, rising tide situation.
Right. Yeah, I think it. Yeah, I agree.
And it does benefit from the fact that there have been several comic book related events at Lloyd Center in the past few years as well. Just recently in March, they had Frankenstein's Comic Swap, which was the brainchild of Cosmic Monkey and Andy. So
yeah, and it looks like your organization has done a few events with the Frankenstein Comic Swap. What's some of the stuff you do? Because it seems like it happens pretty regularly now, like every couple of months they seem to have one.
I think it's twice. I actually think it's twice a year.
Oh, okay.
Like once in the fall and once in the spring. Mm-hmm. I think roughly. Well, we tabled at a couple of Frankenstein events to get the word out. We were at the one recently. I don't think we were at the one before that. We've done two events, so we skipped one. But yeah, that was a great opportunity to talk to people about the project and get some input and get them signed up on our mailing list and that kind of thing.
Cool. What's something about what you have planned that has you extra excited? Like, as a comic book fan, are there specific things of like, yeah, I want to have this museum going, but it also means I get to see certain things? Is there like a pie in the sky, like I want to be able to host a certain event?
Well, I mean, we want to do the standard things like signings, have authors and artists in to do presentations. The thing that a lot of us are really excited about is the maker space, bringing artists in and giving them a creative space that they can actually work in during the day, and then having them partner maybe with students part of the day. That's unique. The only other place I think that has that is I saw one at the Comic-Con Museum in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Had a space which was pretty cool, but it was mostly like for younger kids. There was kind of a 3D printer and more of a little kids maker space. We're thinking about something for older kids and professional artists. But you know, we would love to have partner with PSU and do something like an exposition. A lot of people are reminiscent about Stumptown and miss that. That in the long run, maybe we would have something like Short Run or something in a variety of places around the city, including the museum. But personally, the thing that I get most excited about is the maker space.
Cool.
This might be a question that you don't have an answer to yet. So I'm sorry in advance for even for bringing it up. One of the things that I discovered over my years in the arts community in Portland is that Portland is incredibly good at supporting the arts. They are not as good at being a patron of the arts. And I always use those terms very specifically. Supporting means you show up, you do things, you talk about it, you hang out with your friends, you basically are there in the ecosystem, the art ecosystem. But being a patron means that you are putting money forward.
Right.
Is part of why you went with Kickstarter to start this funding is so that you can also reach people who are outside of Portland who may have deeper pockets and also believe in this?
Well, I've heard, well, first, Cable, I've heard that before, that it's more supporters versus patrons. We want the Kickstarter to at least have a regional investment.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates the opportunity for people in other locations in the Pacific Northwest to invest. The basic concept of the Kickstarter was show that there was a community that is willing to invest in this.
Nice.
I think that would be significant. And we do want, you know, we want it to reach as far as it can, whether it's nationally, certainly regionally, and definitely locally.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. It looks like we've got a question on our Twitch feed. Listener Norm says he has a question. I think we kind of touched on this, but we'll do it again, larger. What is a dream exposition? If money was no object, what would be a dream exhibition for the museum for you?
Gosh. I mean, I'm just going to go back and talk about some of the ones we did talk about in a presentation that we did. I would love to do stuff that I've seen curated around the country. There's one, Afrofuturism through Black comic characters. There's one that focused on a century of women's innovations in comics. I'd love it if we could do a manga exhibit. I think the demand for that would be enormous. People mm-hmm. would get excited about that, and I don't know that there's been one done really on the West Coast. We'd like to do one exhibit we'd be really excited about doing is making the connection between animation, so 2D and 3D arts, like working with Leica Studios. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about something like that. I don't see us like doing something like the Marvel exhibit that they had in OMSI, but I do see us doing stuff that has a broad interest. We'd love to do something like from the 80s forward, you mm-hmm. know, show the evolution of comics or cartoon arts in the Pacific Northwest from the 80s forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of stuff like that.
Cool.
That actually brings up something that I had been thinking about is I noticed that it's cartoons, not comics. And on your websites and like your Kickstarter stuff, it does, you know, mention, as you just did, Leica and other animation studios. So this is not strictly for and about comics.
Right. And yeah, that's why we call it cartoon arts. We're interested in comics, but also graphic novels, editorial cartoons, animation, manga, zines, underground comics, sculptures, and toys. So we're interested in a whole spectrum of cartoon arts.
Cool. We've only got a few minutes left here. I just want to remind folks to check out the Kickstarter. If you just Google, if you just go to Kickstarter and just type in Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts, it should be one of the first things that pop up. You know, there's some real easy, like early, you know, depending on your money, there's some real approachable backer levels. But even at the very manageable, like $100 or $200, there's some cool stuff with like some original art from like Ron Randall, one-of-a-kind prints from Mike Mignola. So there's some cool stuff here, some signed scripts from Chelsea Kane or Brian Michael Bendis. So you guys got some really cool, you know, backer. I always say backer prizes. They're not prizes.
Rewards.
Thank you.
Called rewards.
Yeah. Thanks. So yeah, there's a lot of great stuff in here. So I definitely encourage folks to check it out because this is, I think, something that would thrive and do really well in Portland because we do love our comics and our cartoons here. So it'd be cool to have a place that highlights that yet again. So
Can I plug a couple of things?
Sure. Yes, go ahead. Please.
So, and Cable, you know about some of these since you've hosted them, but we're doing a big comics trivia night. We've partnered with Gigantic Brewing Company, and sometime in the future, there's going to be a Northwest Museum of Cartoon Arts brew just for us.
Cool.
But it's a comic trivia night. It's 21 and over, and it's this Sunday, the 14th, at the Southeast Brewery. Gigantic has three locations, but the Southeast 26th Street is their primary brewing location.
Okay.
And then we're really excited. It's the 20th anniversary of Hellboy.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Of the original one. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Oof.
And we're doing a community benefit screening at the Hollywood Theater on the Sunday, the 28th, from 3 to 5. But we're also going to have a panel discussion moderated by cartoonist and editor and writer Mike Russell, but also with artists and writers of Hellboy Universe and Hellboy, Michael Avon Oeming and Chris Roberson. And we're really excited about that. And
oh, cool. So, they're both fun to chat with. That should be a pretty fun panel.
Yeah, we're really, think that's going to be really good. So I wanted to get a chance to plug those.
Oh, yeah. We'll make sure to link it on the show page and stuff like that. That sounds cool.
Yeah, I knew about the trivia night at Gigantic. I was just posting flyers for that at Guardian.
Nice. Maybe I'll go to it and destroy everyone.
Yeah, but I didn't know about
that's true. We haven't, railroaded a trivia night in, that's in true. A couple years now.
We haven't crushed the dreams of other teams in a long time.
Or annoyed the shit out of everybody.
Either way, we win.
Sounds like a challenge.
Potato, potato.
Yeah. I know. Now that we said that, we'll probably get like embarrassingly poor.
Yeah, we have we'll
lose. Yeah. I have Castro's number. I can just call him.
That's true. That's so cruel to bring him in, though.
Castro is Portland's trivia master.
That's yes,
100%. Ryan Castro.
Yeah.
If he is entered in, if you go to a bar and you hear Ryan Castro's name mentioned as someone who's entered in the trivia,
aim
go
for home. Second.
Just go home.
Wow.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited to see this Kickstarter grow, and hopefully we'll be there opening night on the museum when it finally happens.
Well, I just want to say thank you for inviting me to talk to you all. It was really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Bye. See you later. Thank you very much.
Should I do that?
Yeah, you can go ahead and exit out. Zoom never doesn't make it awkward.
No, it doesn't. It's what it's designed for.
Thanks.
You could always just kick people out.
I know, but then I would feel
that feels ruder.
I would feel.
Well, I mean, like
bad.
As long as we've said bye, and then like you already know where the button is. So rather than let them awkwardly remember where it is, just right out.
The thing is, it's been so long since I've used Zoom, and I know we use it for the past few weeks now. I forget certain functions. Yeah, that's just it. It's just my ADHD brain just forgets certain shit.
It'll come back to you just in time to, I don't know, have to move over to some other
platform. Thing. Yeah.
Yay, technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool. I'm excited to see this museum happen. I hope it does happen. It's definitely something that I think could thrive in Portland, for sure. Norm says he is the Hulk smash of trivia. Yes, Castro kind of is that.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
My argument for why comics matter, jazz is always talked about as it's the true American art form. It's the one American art form. It was made here. Jazz originated here. We have two.
Yep.
It is jazz and comics. Books. Mm-hmm. Comic books are an American invention.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't feel true.
It's because we treat them like trash.
Yeah. But it's been researched. It is an American creation of art form.
It's an original American art form. And that is why comics matter.
What I do know, because Kelly Sue loves to share this fun fact, is that comics, or sequential art storytelling, is the oldest art form in humanity.
Yes.
Because cave paintings are a form of sequential art.
Yes.
So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. I think the one that's acknowledged the most is the Code of Hammurabi.
Code of Hammurabi? I don't know one.
It's a pillar with the laws that King Hammurabi put into motion. And it is it is chiseled figures on depicting what those laws are on a column.
Yeah. But as like sequential storytelling as the comic book is very American.
Yep.
And also I only knew about Hammurabi because of They Might Be Giants. That's when I first heard the name, because of the Mesopotamians.
The internet says Japan, 1775.
Nope.
You don't know more than the internet.
Oh, right. You mean the internet that's convinced that the earth is flat and demons came out of the eclipse yesterday? That internet? What? Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right. Never mind. I take everything back.
You didn't see the demons coming out?
I didn't. Which means, according to Aztec lore, I'm a pretty good guy.
If you don't see the demons, you're...
Generally, only bad men will see the... Oh, you never heard the legend of the Aztec literally has a star warrior goddess who comes out during an eclipse? Aztecs had a magic girl. She literally leads something that translates into roughly the star warriors.
Wow.
Who come out and, I believe, help fight the fucked up demons that eat the sun during an eclipse. Which is different the way the sun dies every night, according to Aztec mythology. It's a different thing. It's bad. But the other thing she does when this happens is that her army of star warriors, of all women who have been wronged by men, they come out and they kill every man who was a piece of shit against the women. And then they are denied access to Mictlan when it's done.
Oh, I had not heard that one, but I did see some stuff.
It's from extreme as hell.
I saw some stuff from David Bowles online the other day that included like eclipses are bad for pregnant women unless they've got their obsidian blade that they carry at their chest, and that the Nawat would sacrifice their palest. The palest people in their tribes to appease, you know, these angry celestial bodies.
Right. Yeah, that all tracks. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy following a lot of his stuff, mainly because he helps correct a lot of things that are just wrong, which is kind of nice. Huh.
Mm-hmm. Well,
one day spend some time going down the rabbit hole of the Aztec space goddess. I also think one of her counterparts dresses as like butterfly gear. So it looks like butterfly wings and headdresses, but they're razor sharp and cut you. Because the Aztecs didn't do anything chill.
Sure. Okay.
Even their like happy harvest god would do some killing if needed. Yeah, it's really fascinating. It's got my brain going into overtime right now. Just the idea of like the space, the Aztec goddess and her space warriors. I'm like, what? Amazing.
That's pretty, that is hardcore.
It's pretty great. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a show.
It's a show, yeah. It's kind of a shorter show tonight, which is okay.
I think it's because we were out late last night.
We were, and we're old. And we just can't do that anymore. But I had a lot of fun. I am glad we went out last night. That was cool. We got to say hi to Rev Nat, who's running in District 2 for City Council.
Yeah, I was about to ask, when are we having him on?
Next week.
Next week.
Yeah. And I wonder, there's some candidates that I would like to reach out to also. See if they'd be interested in doing our wacky little nerd show.
Go right ahead, man.
So
I also.
And if you both have, I do not limit it to just me.
I actually want to reach out to a mayoral candidate.
Oh, yeah, she'd be great. You don't have to be coy about it. She's the only one that seems actually qualified.
That's because she is. That's Leave Ostis, a.k.a. Viva Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
When did I fucking meet her?
I am going to get annoyed when every national media company is like, our ex-stripper is running for mayor in, you guessed it, Portland, Oregon. I mean, like, God damn it.
For one, that's inaccurate. She is still a working woman.
Yep.
She is actively still stripping and does not care about whether or not they talk about that because
I know
that's part of her whole thing. It's like... Yeah, decriminalize sex work.
Guarantee Stop. She knows how this city works better than the people who have officially announced their candidacy.
Yep.
She's 100% is probably more qualified than the rest of them.
Yes.
It's just one other comes close.
I was talking about this with Dave Helfrey a few weeks back on his birthday, actually. And I mentioned that Leave was running for office. He's like, well, that's cool, but after this whole thing with Trump, I don't know if I'm comfortable voting for any sort of, it's like, do I actually want a politician in office, or do I want to vote in someone who's a cult of personality? I'm like, I get that. I 100% get that.
Mm-hmm.
Look into her. She is 100% qualified to hold a political job.
Yeah, and she's been very active in that community to begin with.
It's like, all right, that's different. So I would love to give her the platform here to talk about that.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, yeah. If you have more connections, totally reach out to her. It'd be fun.
I don't have anything.
I thought you were actually handing me something to be like, bring this up. Then I realized it was just your water.
Nope.
Bring up water. Drink.
That's twice in a row on the show now where I have been fooled by your water. Because remember last time, I thought you had Baja Blast for some reason. I was like, what?
Be less susceptible to being fooled by things that aren't real.
You know. With that, I'm Arun Duran.
I'm Bea Narita.
And I am Cable Hashitani.
We'll talk to everybody next week. Bye, y'all.
Demons are real.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. I'm a demon.